Hello, Podheads, and welcome back to another episode of Over My Dead Pod. This is your host for today, Kate Carter.
I'm Kylie Colwell.
And I'm Holly Spear.
And ladies, per usual, we're going to jump right into today's case. Nicole Olson. She was born May 27th, 1981, in San Antonio, Texas. And San Antonio is pretty much where she's going to stay for the rest of her life. She had a pretty normal upbringing, happy child, had both parents had jobs. But in 1988, when she was 7 years old, her parents had their second kid, Justin. Unbeknownst to the family, when Justin was born, it came out that her dad, Nicole's dad, was a heroin addict. No one knew about it. The only reason that they found out is because he actually ended up overdosing. It was a few days after Justin's birth. So if you can imagine that shock, like normal family. Has a daughter, just had a son. A few days later, dad ends up overdosing. You had no idea dad had a drug addiction or anything. I mean, extremely sad. Very well-known family. Everybody was happy, but it was just kind of one of those things. Now, he was the breadwinner of the family, the dad. Now, Nicole's mom is like single mom, brand new baby, 7-year-old, husband died. She ended up having to get a few more jobs to keep everything going. And eventually, Nicole's mom started using alcohol as a coping mechanism, as a lot do. And Nicole would later say that she was a functioning alcoholic at best. Fast forward when Nicole was around 15 years old, she was about a sophomore in high school, I think. And she actually had her first child. Her kid's name was Skylar. And a year later, Nicole dropped out of high school to care for her little baby, but eventually went back and got her GED. She was really into school. The pregnancy was obviously not planned whatsoever. In 1998, a year after baby Skylar's birth, Nicole married the baby daddy. His name was James. Now, people would later say that the two most likely just got married because they had a baby together, but they weren't really meant for each other. They were just a brief casual fling in high school. They got married because they thought that was the right thing to do, but the marriage only lasted a year and the two decided to get to a divorce. Can you imagine being 15 and having a baby?
No.
Can you imagine having a baby right now?
No.
I don't know how you do it, Kate.
Yeah. I mean, I am about to be 30, so I kind of have to like remind myself that I'm 30 and I'm not 15. Okay, so fast forward December 26, 2001, about 13, it actually not about, in fact, it was 13 years to the date of Nicole's dad dying that her mom passed away from heart disease. No one knew that her mom had heart disease, so it was just one day she died and it was found out later that she had heart disease. So can you imagine they died on the exact same day but 13 years apart?
Two surprise deaths.
Two surprise deaths. Yeah, how
Wow.
traumatic. And Nicole was only 20 years old at the time. So now she had her son, Skylar, the baby she had when she was 15. And then she also took in full custody of her little brother, Justin, who was now 13 years old. So at 20 years old, she's got a 5-year-old and a 13-year-old. So in order to take care of herself and the boys, Nicole worked some odd jobs here and there to make a living. One of the employments that she worked at was a restaurant, but this sucks, but all of her paychecks that she got from the restaurant actually were withheld from her from the state government in order for her to pay child support payments for the baby daddy of Skylar, the one from high school. So even though she got small amounts of child support from the baby daddy, she also had to pay him for whenever he had Skylar. So she ended up having multiple jobs because one of her jobs, all of the income went to child support. Which is like, I don't understand now that I have a kid, especially, and I think because I'm older, I do not understand how single mothers like survive.
Also, it's weird that they're paying child support to each other.
Yes. You think it would just like equal, it would cancel out. So she had to keep about 2 to 3 jobs at all times in order to pay for herself, the two kids, and their apartment. The same year, she remarried a man. His name was Carlos. He was a Marine, and the two of them eventually would welcome a baby girl together in 2002, about a year later. And the baby girl's name was Alexa. And for the next 4 years, their family lived in Hawaii together, which is where Carlos was stationed. But in 2006, the couple decided to divorce, and Nicole and baby Alexa returned to Texas. So she was only in Hawaii for a few years and then they ended up back in Texas. But everything from what I can read and like for the rest of the story, I don't think I wrote it down, but Nicole had great relationships with all baby daddies, just letting you know, like there was nothing and vice versa. All of them were like, she's a great woman. It just didn't work out. But like, she was known to really take care of her kids and always keep good relationships. After moving back to Texas, back home, Nicole decided to go to cosmetology school and she actually ended up doing really, really good. And that's where she made a career for herself and she worked at some local hair salons. So that was like the career that took off. In 2006, at the very end, she met a new boyfriend. His name was Hector. And the two of them welcomed a little baby girl in 2008. Her name was London. So she's got Skylar, the older son, Alexa, middle child, and then London, little baby girl. And then she's got her brother that she doesn't take care of as much anymore because he's older. Only a few months after the birth of baby London, the couple broke up. Three different kids, three different baby daddies. That being said, because it's very usually looked down upon when you talk about multiple baby daddies, like I said before, Nicole was an amazing mom, very generous with sharing custody with the baby daddies. They always had positive things to say about her. And like, for an example, she didn't have an obligation to share baby London with baby daddy Hector, but she made sure that every weekend London went and spent time with Hector and like saw him. So she was just a good person. In 2014, Nicole was 33 years old. She was dating and living with a new boyfriend. He was a few years older. And I will say this one was weird. I found a police record, but could not find the name of this boyfriend. So anywhere I looked, the police record was for Nicole, but anywhere I looked, the boyfriend was unnamed. Don't know why, just said boyfriend, now ex-boyfriend. But so she's living with this dude. And at some point, Nicole gets arrested for a misdemeanor assault. But get this, Nicole had been out with friends one night and she was drinking and she called this boyfriend to come get her so that she didn't have to drive home. And he apparently like didn't answer any of her phone calls, didn't answer any texts. And so after like a period of time, one of her friends drove her home. And when Nicole went through the front door of their house or their apartment together, the boyfriend was just sitting in the living room on the couch, like texting. So he obviously had his phone the entire time. And Nicole's like, what the fuck? So she grabs his phone from him. She's pissed off, drunk, and he is sexting with another woman. So she slaps him.
Rude. Yeah.
I would do the same.
So she slaps him, and that little bitch calls the police and gets her arrested for misdemeanor assault, which is nuts. But I mean, technically, misdemeanor assault, but he was being a douche. But if you ask Nicole what happened, all of that happened. And then when she slapped him, he actually dragged her outside by her hair from the ground and made her wait outside until the police came. So because there was no marks on her or anything, she said the police just didn't believe her.
Wow.
That is now an ex-boyfriend and he is no longer, the unnamed man is no longer in the rest of the story. But like shit like that, like I feel bad for Nicole. And if you go and look her up, she's gorgeous. Like she's so, and her kids are so pretty too. Like they're just a gorgeous family. Nicole was arrested. She was charged with misdemeanor assault, but the charge ended up being dropped later on because the boyfriend, well, ex-boyfriend never went to any of the court dates and he refused to speak to the police. So they were just like, all right, we're dropping the case. After this relationship, Nicole pretty much kept to herself for the rest of the time of the story until we get into the next end. Like she wanted to be in a serious relationship. She didn't want to have just like hookups and stuff. She was now in her 30s and just kind of wanted to like move on with her life. 2 years later in 2016, Nicole and two of her girlfriends, Vanessa and Kelly, they created a small jewelry business together. It is called Kiva Cole. The three of them would spend their weekends together going to like little markets to promote their jewelry business. And Nicole, like I said, because she was gorgeous, was often used as the company's model for most of their products. So at some point, Kiva Cole posted on their Instagram or Facebook or something like that, social media, a picture of the jewelry and Nicole was modeling it. And Nicole ended up getting DM'd. Some guy slid into her DMs to try to go meet with her and whatnot. And his name was Charlie Wheeler. Before I jump into their upcoming relationship, let me tell you about Charlie for a little bit. So Charlie Wheeler, he was born very different from Nicole. Nicole had a good life growing up until things got messy, obviously, with her dad and then the events that unfolded after that. Charlie was born into a very influential family in Texas. So he was born in 1986 in Fredericksburg, Texas, pretty rural area, born and raised on a ranch, grew up in a religious family, loved their farm, loved rodeos. Other than the ranch, Charlie's parents also had a hand in one of the largest oil and gas trades in all of Texas. So if that tells you, money, money, that's pretty much where their entire family income came from. After high school, Charlie decided he wanted to attend Shriner University, which is in Texas. But after his freshman year, he dropped out and decided to follow in his dad's footsteps of becoming a professional roper in rodeos, which just sounds like a fun job to do when you have money. After about 3 years of this, Charlie decided he wanted to go in a different direction professionally, and he wanted to do something of his own. So he started his own company, his startup company, and he created Security Gates. And that company was called OTG, which stands for On the Go. He had that company for a few years, sold it, won some rodeos, got money from that. Like, he was making money. And when he sold his company, he was around 24 years old. So he was still a baby, like having gone through all of this or done all of this. At some point, he started a new business that provided services for oil and gas companies. And about within 2 years, that company had timed itself by 100. So it blew up, got tons of money, tons of employees. He ended up selling it. And fortunately, he did that right before 2016 when oil prices had dropped. So he did really good for himself being still a baby. And he ended up returning back to his family's ranch to help out with everything on that end. So besides his life experience before the age of 26, Charlie was a pretty outgoing person. He loved to be out and about. He was a partier. That kind of truly showed because Charlie had quite a few run-ins with the law. For example, in 2008, Charlie had actually been arrested for public intoxication. He was working at a local rodeo when he was arrested because he was so drunk, he took off all of his clothes. He ended up pleading guilty, but was just fined for the arrest. A year later, he got a DUI. When he got this DUI, he was like driving crazy, did the breathalyzer, but the charges ended up being dropped, which I always find it very weird in stories because I don't see it in person. But in stories, when somebody gets like a DUI or DWI and then the charges get dropped, it has to like, the only thing I can think in my head is clerical mistake or something from like the police officer, because if you're drunk and you're driving, you get arrested. There's no way to say you're not drunk, you know?
There's a couple loopholes.
Personally, I think it was because of his family.
Yeah, sometimes it's just daddy's money.
Yeah. Fast forward to 2013, Charlie and his at the time girlfriend were at a hotel bar when he got too intoxicated again. The bar ended up cutting him off, and then he went crazy and tried to start punching anybody in his path. And so the hotel called the cops. He ended up getting arrested again. He spent the night at the police station, but once again, no charges happened. They were dropped. So kind of gives you a little insight, you know, maybe how powerful his family was. So with all that being said, you know, I just kind of wanted to paint a picture of young old Charlie. So Charlie slid into Nicole's DMs. He was like, "What's up? How you doing?" And the two of them began chatting. And at some point, Nicole invited Charlie out to an event she was doing in LA, which is funny because they're both in Texas. So I don't really know why they wouldn't just meet up in Texas. But they went out to LA together. They kicked it off that weekend and their relationship bloomed from there and they began dating. So after that, they saw each other all the time, were consistently happy. Everyone saw them together, like, good picture, nothing wrong, nothing going on. So a year into dating, Charlie bought a pretty nice estate in a neighborhood called Anacostia Springs in Texas. This area, this neighborhood is filthy rich. The average house there is like $2 million property and it's on acres of land. So every house had its own, it was like pretty much like little farms, little estates. And he bought his for $1.2 million. It was huge. It was 5,000 square feet, 5 beds, 5 baths, sat on a 5-acre lot. had a resort pool, hot tub, gym, movie room, and it was in a gated neighborhood with security. So pretty much anything you could want for a piece of property, he had it. And once Charlie fully moved into his new house, he offered for Nicole and her girls to move into the house with him, even though they had only been dating for a year. Because of her past, she was kind of, Nicole was like, I don't know if this is a good idea, but I also want stability for myself and my girls. This relationship's going well. So she went ahead and moved them out of their small apartment and into the estate. Oh, and I forgot to mention, when Charlie and Nicole first started dating, Charlie's ranch family basically took a loving to Nicole and her girls. They wanted to spend so much time with them. Like, they didn't have grandkids or anything at the time. So they loved them. They had a great relationship. They spent holidays together, attended church every week, like everything. They even went on hunting trips together. And hunting was like a really big part of Charlie's and his family's lives. And at some point, Charlie decided instead of going on these hunting trips by himself, he wanted Nicole to come with him. And so he pretty much made sure that she was trained in firearm safety so that, and like gun awareness and all that stuff so that she could go with him. So anytime the girls, London and Alexa, were with their individual baby daddies or with their dads, that's when Nicole and Charlie would go away for like their fun hunting adventures and stuff. As for Nicole's daughters, who still lived at the house, Alexa was now in high school. She was doing really good for herself. She was a cheerleader. She was super like into the local church scene. She even worked at the church's daycare on the weekends. And post-graduation, which was still a few years away, she was wanting to attend Texas A&M to become a doctor someday. And then London, baby London, I think she's around 10 years old at this time. She was doing really well for herself. She was on the quieter side, but was very artsy. So she liked things like musical theater, animals, and her goal was to become a famous singer one day. So everything seemed to be going well for the girls, and Nicole's life was doing great. Her relationship with Charlie was good. The kids were good. So overall, like, life is good. Of course, that's what it seems on the outside, because you never know what's really going on. But on the inside for them, stuff was happening. The same year, so about a year and a half into dating, this is in May of 2017, Nicole had a photo shoot for her jewelry brand to do, and she showed up to the shoot with a black eye. So before speaking to anyone, Nicole like walked into the shoot and basically went right up to a mirror and started trying to cover up the bruise with makeup. But people saw her doing this. And when her two girlfriends came, they tried to ask Nicole what was like going on and what had happened. And Nicole, I mean, she even admitted to it. She said that her and Charlie had gotten into a fight, but that everything was okay and like to not worry about it. And then she pretty much brushed it off from there and didn't want to talk about it anymore. But that was like kind of the first sign to the public that maybe shit was happening. A few months later, at the beginning of 2018, the girls were having a night out together again, and they decided that they wanted to attend a basketball game, and that the Spurs basketball was like in town. And on the way to the game, apparently Charlie called girlfriend Vanessa multiple times. And when Vanessa answered, like, she's with Nicole. But when Vanessa answered, he was like threatening Vanessa, saying things like, you should be lucky I'm letting her go out with you. Who are you to do stuff without telling me? Like, just weird shit, very controlling shit. And that's the first time that like one of the friends had heard stuff like that before. So people were like, this is not normal. What's going on, Nicole? And Nicole was super embarrassed. After the basketball game, the girls went to a local music bar to hang out for a bit. And that's when Charlie began calling Nicole this time on her cell phone, but was doing so obsessively. At this point, like, we're in 2018, iPhone locations are a thing. So Charlie was able to see that where Nicole was at a bar. The girls guessed that Charlie didn't want her to be there, and he was trying to get her to call, like, go home. And so he kept calling her until her phone died. How many times do you have to call someone in order for their phone to eventually run out of power? Like, that's a lot.
I'd imagine several hundred.
Yes. Yeah. So not a good night. She eventually goes home, Nicole does, because it was time to go home. And I guess she was probably embarrassed too. A few months later, during the summer of 2018, there was a day where the same friend, Vanessa, went to Charlie and Nicole's house to spend some girl time with Nicole. And it was during that day that Vanessa would later recall that she kind of fully got a picture of what was going on and what Nicole and Charlie's relationship was really like. For example, this is so fucking nuts, but for example, at some point the girls were in the pool outside, like chilling, and Charlie came outside, like yelling and screaming. And apparently there was a single pepperoni on the kitchen floor. And he was yelling about how Nicole's girls, like the kids, must have dropped it on the floor. And he demanded that Nicole get out of the pool in front of Vanessa, get out of the pool and go pick up the pepperoni.
All of that for a pepperoni?
Yes. And Nicole's kids weren't in town that weekend. So like he was blaming it on the kids. They weren't there. And it was a single fucking piece of pepperoni on the floor. And he blew off. Friend Vanessa's just sitting there in the pool like, what the hell is it? Like, I would be like, you need to come home with me now. This is ridiculous. Nicole's in the house picking up pepperoni. Charlie starts yelling at her some more. Anyways, they ended up getting into a big fight. And Vanessa is there the whole time, like just standing there awkwardly. And Vanessa ends up like asking permission if she can leave because she just felt so awkward. She obviously calls Nicole later and is like, what the hell's going on? And Nicole just brushes it all off, saying like she was so embarrassed. Vanessa would later on say that this was the day where she really noticed Nicole's like quote unquote sparkle, you know, started to dim a little bit. Nicole became more reserved, didn't want to go out, didn't see her girlfriends as much. She was like being a lot of really quiet, a whole thing. Eventually, other people started to catch on this behavior as well, and it was just becoming more public. At one point during one of Charlie and Nicole's hunting trips, the two of them were staying at a local hotel when Charlie, once again, like he had, you know, 6-8 years earlier, began fighting with Nicole in the hotel lobby after drinking too much. And apparently it got rowdy enough that the hotel called the cops, and the cops told Charlie instead of like arresting him or anything, they told Charlie to pack his shit up and go home. Well, Charlie went and packed his and Nicole's things and then left. And he left Nicole at the hotel. So Nicole is by herself. She had no clothes, no phone. She was in a town she had never been to before, like at a random hotel on a hunting trip. Thank God she had her girlfriend's phone number memorized who lived nearby and was able to get picked up by her friend. Which, just throwing that out there, do you guys, I do not have your phone numbers memorized. I think I have like 3 or 4 numbers memorized and y'all's ain't one of them. So maybe
the only numbers I have memorized are the ones that were before iPhones and like where you had to pick up your home phone and dial. Right.
Yeah.
The only phone numbers I have memorized are my 3 parents.
I've got my parents and Cameron's.
Yeah, I guess I need to do some studying tonight.
Okay, so Charlie left Nicole at this hotel, like took all her shit and left. So he's an asshole. For the next like 24 hours, Nicole spent the time with her friend Monica before she flew back home. She basically told Monica everything about like how she was unhappy in the relationship, how she's going to leave Charlie, how she wants to move out soon. Like she had a plan to do so, if you can kind of start to see at this point what's probably going to happen. So even though all of Nicole's friends were starting to see like how bad the relationship with Charlie was, none of Charlie's friends or family saw it that way. In fact, if you ask Charlie's parents, who were super close to Nicole and her kids, they said it wasn't that way at all. They said that Charlie was a great human. He truly loved Nicole and the girls and treated the kids like they were his own, you know? So like there's definitely conflicting stories, but my biggest thing to say is like, you never know what's going on because we're not those people. His parents might say it's phenomenal and it might not be. You never know. With that being said, though, Charlie's friends and families, their stories kind of don't work out because court records say the opposite. Though I wasn't able to figure out exactly what they were for, I can say that the police were called out to Charlie and Nicole's house over 6 times in 2018. And then at the end of 2018, Nicole finally started telling other people than just her friend Monica that she was planning on moving out, getting her own place, and that she was going to call things off with Charlie, which I want to pause and just say something really quickly. when I, because this is the second story I've done where the girl, the woman is like, I'm going to break off things with my boyfriend and I'm going to leave. If you're telling people that, like multiple people, I just feel like it needs to have, it needs to be this at the same time. Like things need to happen at the same time. You know, like if I told you guys like, oh, I'm going to leave my husband, but then it's a month later and I still, I don't know. I just feel like you shouldn't be spreading that news to people if you don't want it to get back to the person.
Any of my friends ever said anything like that? Like you're coming to my house that day.
ASAP.
Yeah. Also, leaving an abusive partner is the most dangerous time. I don't know if that's for men and women, but I know that to be true for women statistically. Yeah.
Like really bad.
Yeah.
Not good percentages. So yeah. In fact, December 31st, 2018, Nicole went and toured a new apartment complex that was in Fredericksburg. And then 2 weeks later, beginning of 2019, she received confirmation that the space she had toured was now available and asked if she wanted it, which she said that she did. So it's like an email saying she's moving out. January 9th, 2019, the same day that she wrote the email to the apartment complex, Nicole spoke to one of her baby daddies, Hector, around 9 p.m. This wasn't out of the ordinary. Like the two of them were on good terms. They often talked to each other about the daughter, London. And after hanging up with Hector, Nicole also spoke on the phone to her girlfriend, Vanessa, another friend named Bethany. And then Nicole also confirmed an appointment for the next day at the hair salon that she worked at. So a busy bee for being 9 p.m. at night. Around the same time, apparently, Charlie and Nicole got into another fight at the house. But this time it was big enough to make Charlie want to leave the house for the night. And so he stormed out around 10 p.m. Now, totally unsure of where Charlie was staying that night, but Nicole and her daughter stayed at the house and were just like moving on with their normal lives as if everything was normal. Maybe the fights happened a lot and Charlie left a lot, you know? But throughout the night, Charlie called and texted Nicole multiple times, but didn't have any luck getting through to her. Not only that, but I guess later on when Alexa, like daughter Alexa's phone was being looked at, a text had been sent out from her phone that same night that said, quote, are you here? She's talking to herself, end quote. A very weird, like, is who here? And who's talking to herself? Like her mom? Her baby sister? Like, what are we, another person? After not being able to get into contact with anybody, you know, instead of going home or calling the police, Charlie contacts Nicole's brother, Justin, and says like, hey, I'm worried about Nicole and the girls. Have you heard from them? Bitch, just go home. Like if you're so worried about, or call the cops, like if you're worried about it. An hour later at 11 p.m., six phone calls go out from Nicole's phone. And these all happened within a few minutes. So a short period of time. The first phone call went out to Charlie's mom, Cynthia, but it went straight to voicemail after Cynthia didn't answer. The other five phone calls were to 911, but all of them except for the last one were too quick and ended before 911 was actually connected. And then the last one, though it was connected to 911, it was too short for the police to figure out the location of where the call went out from. The next day, January 10th, Charlie texted her brother, Nicole's brother, Justin, again, asking if he had seen or heard from Nicole or the girls yet. This was around 7 a.m. Once again, call the fucking cops. Go to the house, Charlie. Makes no sense while you're texting the brother. About 2 hours later, Charlie finally called 911. But this time he called from his house. I guess he had returned home. In the 911 call, Charlie said that all three girls, Nicole, Alexa, and London, were all dead. They had all been shot inside of his home on the second floor. Charlie said that Nicole had committed suicide, and when the police arrived a few minutes later, they found Charlie outside acting absolutely hysterical on the front lawn, screaming, yet no tears coming from his face. And apparently he was acting weird enough that this behavior was noted in the police report as well. Upon entering the house, police found all three girls dead from gunshot wounds on the second floor of the home. It was noted that all three were cold to the touch, which we know means they had been deceased for a good chunk of time, but no estimated time of death was ever released publicly. All three were within touching distance of each other, and the suspected murder weapon, a handgun, was found in the hallway closet next to Nicole's body. That being said, both Nicole and Alexa had been shot once in the head. Alexa was only 16 years old at the time, but baby London, who was only 10 years old at the time, had been shot in both the head and the neck. Charlie was immediately taken in for questioning, which is like, okay, good. You would assume that's the protocol. But once he was interviewed and released, police did a media statement and pretty much said right away that they believe the girls had been murdered by an unknown assailant. That being said, though, after the medical examiner's report came back, which, by the way, nothing said this, but I find it a little weird. The medical examiner's report on all three bodies came back within a day. And you'll see later on why I'm a little fishy about it. But it came back within a day after the autopsies had taken place. It was stated that both Alexa and London had died from homicide, but that Nicole had died from suicide. With that being said, no other information was released with this medical report, like no toxicology report, no gunshot residue, like information, nothing else. So even though the medical examiners ruled it a murder-suicide situation, the lead sheriff on the case, his name is Sheriff Javier Salazar, he thought otherwise. He pretty much said he wasn't going to close the case as a murder-suicide until all persons are investigated and all evidence is collected, which we love to hear. You want to give a round of applause for Sheriff Salazar, but don't, because he's a douche. This is a very frustrating case, and you'll figure out why. But, you know, it was good for them to decide on continuing the case, but it was also completely out of the normal. Once, like, you guys know this, but once you get anything that says suicide on it, it's so hard to get a case opened once it says suicide. And so Sheriff Salazar said from the beginning, he was like, I'm not even going to close it. I don't think this is correct, which is just odd. And then to put on top of it, the medical examiner's report came back within a day. So you're just kind of at the beginning already being like, why are the sheriff and the autopsy report people like not meshing, kind of thing?
The police would know about the several domestic calls to the house.
Right. Medical examiner wouldn't. Even once the deaths were announced publicly, like people found out that the girls had died, the police continued to investigate and they made the entire home and the property a crime scene for a long time. The police were pretty much in and out of the house for weeks, collecting what we can assume was evidence, taking fingerprints, running tests, but the public was never given any of this information. To this day, we have none of that. Like, we have no idea what they were doing or what they found.
Deborah, Nicole's ex-husband and the father of her 16-year-old daughter, says he knows in his heart that Nicole wouldn't do anything to hurt her children or take her own life.
A time of reflection.
Glad that you guys are here.
And a time to spread the word justice.
So we want the truth to be told. We want the truth to come out.
Carlos Montes is the father of 16-year-old Alexa, and used to be married to her mom, 37-year-old Nicole Olson.
Even to this day, our relationship as ex-spouses was great. We never argued or fought over anything when it came to Alexa.
He is in disbelief they are gone, including Olson's younger daughter, 10-year-old London. Montes says Olson was a good mother.
I never doubted her choices as a mother. She always made great decisions.
Montes was among several speakers tonight who not only shared their memories, made it clear how they feel about the investigation.
We all have our suspicions and our suspects. I'm not going to fully outright say what it is that I think, but I can know and say that Nicole could not have done this, and that the home that she was living in, we just feel that it wasn't a great place for our children to have been loved.
Now, in regards to the investigation, we do know sheriff investigators were interviewing a friend of the family today. In his last update, Sheriff Javier Salazar says this case is far from over. He says the medical examiner's findings are independent from BCSO Investigators are looking at several things here, including text messages, cell towers, surveillance video from neighbors, social media for all involved.
So obviously both the medical examiner's office and the sheriff's office were like questioned by the media and questioned by the public and Nicole's family in particular on multiple occasions, because even though it was being ruled as a murder-suicide, but they weren't closing the case because they weren't sure about it, no one thought it was murder-suicide. Nicole's family, Nicole's friends, her baby daddies, Charlie's family, Charlie's friends, none of them thought it was a murder-suicide. So like everyone was kind of gathering around the fact of like the medical examiner was wrong, hoping that the sheriff's office was going to do something about it. So, I mean, if you think about it, like, let's say Nicole didn't commit murder-suicide with her two girls. So what, her and Charlie get into a fight, he leaves, weird text goes out of Alexa's phone, Charlie's mom gets called, 911 calls go out, and then nothing. Charlie doesn't return home until the next morning, finds the girls, and then 911 he calls, but he immediately says on the 911 call that Nicole had committed suicide. Just throwing this out there, okay? Now, I'm going off my script because I probably wrote it somewhere else, but if I ever find a body, especially like my loved one, I'm probably not going to say suicide. Like, I just feel like that's a really big decision to make right away, especially when there's multiple, you know, like there, it wasn't just one person. It was three of them. Like, I don't think on the 911 call, I'd be like, it's a suicide. Like, she killed the kids and killed herself. I just feel like that's a very weird thing to say right off the bat.
Planting a story.
Right. That's what it sounds like. And also, I think I mentioned it before, but the neighborhood that they live in, it's a gated neighborhood. It's very wealthy. They have 24/7 security, like a person, multiple people at the gate. You have to check in. You have your car license plate get scanned. Like, but we don't have any knowledge whatsoever about like the whole security situation when the deaths happen, you know? We aren't given any of that. Like, who went through the gate? When did Charlie leave? When did he return? Was somebody else coming in? Like, were there any unknown cars? Like, there's a lot of stuff that isn't public knowledge, but could, if it was, it would probably help a lot. But maybe they're also keeping it for some reason. But maybe Charlie knew something about Nicole that we didn't, and he knew that it was a suicide, you know? The only few things we do know about the case, like the medical examiner's report, is pretty much what Charlie has said, because obviously the girls are dead. So we don't really know the timeline other than that, since nothing has been released. Pro and a con. I mean, maybe they're building a case against somebody, the sheriff's office, or multiple people, and they don't want information to get out. Or this could all be really bad, which I'm kind of thinking that the sheriff's office might be covering it all up because Charlie did it and his family's so influential. When you have power, when you have money, they will do anything to not have that person get in trouble. Here's another fun thing. When Charlie left his house that night and he left Nicole, Alexa, and London to themselves, apparently Charlie went to somebody else's home. Like, it was like he went and stayed the night somewhere else. To this day, just like the old ex-boyfriend who remains nameless, we do not know whose house he went to, but the person is known. But it's like their name has been redacted from everything. In anything that you read online, it just says unknown relative. So apparently Charlie went to someone's residence. That person was also at the crime scene the next morning when Charlie showed up. So like, why did that person go with him? Who was that person? The police did investigate this unknown relative along with Charlie, and they even looked into phone records, but that person was like never arrested, never named. The results were never made public. We just know that they were never arrested.
That's crazy. So there's just this elusive person that's semi-involved that we don't know.
Like, I don't understand. I just don't. Anytime names are redacted, the only thing I think of is it's a child.
Yeah.
You know, like under 18, because they can, or a minor, a baby. But yeah, their name isn't anywhere. It just says unknown relative. But the person was at the crime scene. We did find out from a media report, though, that at some point the head sheriff, Sheriff Salazar, said that when it came to potential persons of interest, some of these people that they had picked up on got attorneys very quickly and were not cooperative with the police. So that's very suspicious as well. If you're telling me that there's multiple people that are potential suspects, all of them lawyered up and they're not talking to the cops, like, I'm always going to sit here and say something, and I guess you never know until you're in the moment. But like, if you're innocent, you ain't going to not talk to the cops, you know, like, unless they're trying to frame you, I guess.
I think everyone should have a lawyer.
No, everyone should have a lawyer, but then to not talk to the cops, like, if they're like, we think you killed these girls, and you lawyer up immediately and then refuse to cooperate with them.
But then you like run the risk of your words being twisted.
That's true. I don't know. I feel like I would just want to make sure I was not being investigated.
Is it safe to say, Kylie, that like a lot of times when people get a lawyer, they do speak to the police like with their lawyer, and they've told them like what to say, what not to say?
Like, that makes sense. But if right. you don't speak at all and your lawyer's like, they don't want to talk to you guys at all.
But I feel like in some situations it would be best to not speak to the police.
Yeah, you guys are right.
Without a warrant. But it does make you look guilty to the police and the general public, I feel.
I think I would do at least one kind of statement thing, like with my attorney. Like, I'll go in for one thing of investigate, like, whatever you guys want to ask me. I'm innocent. I know I am, but I'm not talking to you after this. I don't want to get involved.
Yeah, if you're innocent. But I feel like if you're guilty, then your lawyer would be like, yeah, no.
You guys, if you ever commit a crime, get an attorney ASAP and do not talk to the police.
A reason they wouldn't talk to the police is, one, because it's weird that there's multiple people.
Right.
Is this like a conspiracy situation? Or two, is everyone scared of a person or persons?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Maybe a family.
Maybe a family who has oil money.
Yeah. So as the time passes on, no answers or information have been given. The family of Nicole eventually decides to get involved with like a nonprofit organization. This organization assists family with getting like law enforcement help in cases. So this organization in particular, I had never heard of them, but they're called Project Absentist. And according to their website, they quote, help law enforcement in their efforts to locate missing persons or collaborate closely with law enforcement agencies to close cases, end quote. And the whole organization itself, nonprofit, it's made up of former law enforcement employees. So that's cool. And after doing a short investigation of their own into this case, the organization right away puts out a public statement that says, quote, in our professional opinions, based on the interviews we have conducted, we cannot tell you passionately enough that Nicole is not a murderer. We will go on record saying that she is not a murderer, end quote. At some point when Project Absentist was working at the local sheriff's office, the nonprofit was pushing for the office to use something called geofencing. Have you guys heard of geofencing?
Yeah, I feel like I have heard that.
So I had to Google it just to make sure I was thinking of what I was trying to think of. And it's basically like a location service that you can use for investigative like purposes that shows you where and when a phone or something on cellular data is. So like if I'm in my townhouse right now and then I leave, geofencing would have been able to see that I was here in this exact spot at this exact time because of the cellular data. But it also would have been able to see that Cameron's here, my neighbor is home, you know, Doug down the street or whatever is home, you know, so shit like that. If the sheriff's office had used geofencing on Charlie's estate, they would have been able to see who was there phone-wise or laptop-wise in the house on the night that the girls died and at what time. So it would have helped them determine if it really was just Nicole and the two girls in the house, or maybe Charlie was there longer than he said, or maybe there were other people there that we don't know about at all. But in order to get this done, the sheriff's office had to send over a file to the local DA's office showing that there was probable cause. But according to the district attorney's office, they never received that file from the sheriff's. It just kind of seems like, yeah, the nonprofit organization asked the sheriffs to do this, and then they ended up just not doing it. So for one reason or another, like I said, nothing's public. We don't know why they didn't do it. Head Sheriff Salazar doesn't release shit to the public. So either there's stuff they don't want us to know, or they don't have anything, basically. Those are the two options.
It's weird to geofence like an entire town instead of just starting with Charlie and looking at his specific data.
Right. Maybe they already had the data that they needed, and so they didn't want to have to put out more effort. You know, like, it's, they literally either have the data or they don't. Like, there's no in between on this one. Especially, my biggest thing is, it's if you look up this neighborhood, the Anacostia Springs in Texas, it is very nice and gated, and there's security, and there's, you know, everybody's got security cameras. Like, it's huge, and these people are on luscious properties. And so for the public to not be able to find out what time Charlie left the house that night, other than his word, is crazy.
I think the police definitely know.
Right. They're just not saying shit. But like, maybe it was somebody else that came into the neighborhood and did it, or people. But like, why has none of that been released? Now in the story, it's 2020. The baby daddies of Alexa and London, Hector and Carlos, they decided to take things into their own hands and filed their own lawsuits against Charlie. They filed suits against Charlie for gross negligence, wrongful death, and then something along the lines of like willingness to leave Nicole home alone with unsecured firearms on the property when he was worried about her mental health. Both men said really up to this point and beyond that they don't believe Nicole killed either of the girls, nor did she kill herself, and that they never saw a single drop sign of mental health issues in Nicole, like Charlie had been telling the world, basically. At the same time, on baby London's side of the family, her aunt published in a local newspaper asking for assistance in getting a certain law passed. So this law is called the Red Flag Law. It would force firearms to be confiscated from the properties of people who have mental health issues or domestic issues, which is a great thing. We love that. In this case, we never knew that Charlie or Nicole had mental health issues. It would have been hard to have proved that. But because there was public knowledge that the law enforcement had gone to their house so many times that one year, and Charlie had been arrested multiple times for his drunken escapades, that I believe this law would have worked in their case because they had lots of guns. But unfortunately, nothing ever came from this newspaper article. Nothing about the law ever being passed. And in fact, when Sheriff Salazar was asked about it multiple times, he would just change the subject. Like, he wouldn't even answer.
You would think as a sheriff, you'd want less crimes.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the fall of 2020, the sheriff's office released a statement saying that they were planning on making an official death ruling by Christmas. But leading up to it, nothing was ever said. In fact, the only thing that came out publicly during those few months was that Sheriff Salazar himself was saying he wasn't in a rush to get all of this figured out, and that he surely wouldn't be, quote, bullied into making a decision, which, like, we don't really know what he was talking about, but I can only assume it has to do with Nicole's family, like, wanting answers and stuff like that. As you can guess it, Christmas 2020 came and went. No news. Nothing was posted by the sheriff's office. In fact, January 4th, a few days later, 2021, Sheriff Salazar had given the case back to the sheriff's office, criminal investigation division, because he, quote, didn't really want to work on it anymore, end quote. So everybody's like, oh yeah, he doesn't want to make a ruling. He's working so hard. I don't think he was doing shit. I think he was just trying to postpone as long as possible making the final decision. Maybe he was getting paid off by a wealthy family. I don't know. But then again, you know, but then again, if that, okay, let's say he was getting paid off by a wealthy family who didn't want their son to get in trouble. But Charlie's family was also the people that said they don't think Nicole committed suicide. So, like, it is a very weird, because wouldn't you think they'd be pushing for it?
But they don't think Charlie did it. They think some random person came in and killed them.
Yeah. Get your story straight, you know? A year later in 2022, no news updates had been heard. The last thing we heard was that Charlie Wheeler was still a potential person of interest in the case, but there was no more information or updates We do know that since the case begun, there were over 12 search warrants signed off on. We know some of those were obviously for the house. Some were for AT&T and Sprint phone services. So it's safe to assume that the investigators were able to and did look at the parties that were involved, like their phone records and locations from the night of the killings. But it's just, you know, it's frustrating that with all this time that's gone by and years, there's no final determination on the deaths. It still hasn't been made like a closed case. Was it murder-suicide? Was it a brutal murder attack? Like we don't know.
2 years and 4 months since these three lives were taken, Nicole Olson and her daughters, Alexa and London. In that time, the Bexar County Sheriff's Office has continued their investigation into a case the sheriff maintains has loose ends.
As it stands, the initial autopsy report, the initial ruling from the medical examiner, does tell us that the two young girls were murdered, but it also says that Nicole committed suicide.
To those who knew Olson and her girls, a murder-suicide is out of the question. To the sheriff profiling these type of cases, things just are not adding up.
Typically, women don't shoot themselves in the head when they kill themselves. Typically, women don't kill themselves with a gun. Again, all of those are theories, but what really happened in this case? We just don't know at this point. So there are various persons of interest in this case that would love it if I just stop using that term, but they're a person of interest. They remain somebody that I still want to talk to in this case. Whether their attorney will allow me to talk to them or not, whether I can get a warrant to talk to them or not, that remains to be seen. But it doesn't change the fact that this is somebody that we'd still like to talk to in connection with this case.
Have all persons of interest spoken to you in regards to this case?
Not all persons of interest have spoken to us every time that we've wanted them to. Some of them have obtained attorneys, and the attorneys are quite frankly doing what attorneys do and not allowing us to talk to people, not allowing us to get evidence in the case. Again, that doesn't necessarily mean that I can infer guilt from that. It just says that I'm not able to always talk to all persons of interest in this case.
3 years after the murders, the families of Alexa and London wrote to the Texas Attorney General begging for this case to be turned over to the Texas Rangers because they believed that the local police department, the sheriff's office, and in particular, Sheriff Salazar, had, quote, dropped the ball, end quote, on finding justice. In fact, this letter that they wrote, they stated that they believe Sheriff Salazar could be hiding information and potentially covering up whoever committed the crime. Unfortunately, to this day, the families have never received an answer to their letter or numerous phone calls. I do want to jump on some potential theories of what happened. I know we've talked about some of them, so this is short and sweet. But obviously, the first one is that the medical examiner's office was right in their findings that Nicole did kill her two daughters before committing suicide. Maybe her fight with Charlie just like sent her over the edge. She did the unthinkable. This is a theory that not many believe, especially the girls' families. They just don't think that this was an option. Another theory, which is obviously the one I'm leaning more towards, is that Charlie killed Nicole, Alexa, and London. During or after the fight, Nicole had tried calling 911 multiple times. Alexa sent out a weird text, or was it Alexa? And Charlie then snapped and shot all three girls. He then left the house, planted seeds to make it look like Nicole had committed a murder-suicide. He obviously never returned home or called the cops, went back the next morning to find their bodies, and then called the cops. Unfortunately, because the police haven't released any information on their findings, we don't know if Charlie did it or not. I mean, where's the security footage? Where's the phone records? Where's the crime scene evidence? Where's the neighborhood gate activity records? And then to like kind of put the icing on the cake, neither Charlie nor his parents or his family ever reached out to Nicole's family or Alexa's or London's. Like they to this day have not said a single word. I mean, they've kept quiet. No statements or anything. Another theory that has been out there is Sheriff Salazar brought it up a few times before, but that this maybe was a crime of opportunity, which is to me a bunch of bullshit. There's no way that all of this unfolded and it happened to be just someone who was there and killed all three people and left. Like that just doesn't, I don't really think that's a theory for me, to be honest.
No, like Charlie just happened to leave that night.
Right. And then one of the last theories is that this was a murder for hire case, which is more likely than the opportunity crime, but still a little more far-fetched. I would be shocked if it ended up being a murder for hire and not them covering up Charlie. But it would still put Charlie at the forefront, though, because he would have had to hire someone. It would have been him to not only kill Nicole, but her kids, which just doesn't, like, why would you kill the kids kind of thing?
Yeah.
You know, maybe he found out like that Nicole was planning on leaving him and moving out and taking the girls. I mean, if you remember what I said earlier, Nicole had sent the email confirming to the apartment complex that she was going to move in the same night that she ended up dying. Maybe Charlie's family is of a lot of power and they own a lot of stock locally, like both in the oil and gas industry, but also like the rodeo, the ranch, the farms. They're very well off and politically. And so there's the potential of this whole case just being covered up to save Charlie's family, you know, and to not, maybe, I don't know this, but maybe Charlie's family donates a lot to the sheriff's office or something like that. You know, like there's a lot of different reasons. Sheriff Salazar has gone on from this case and has been reelected multiple times to head of sheriff. You know, like it's just there's different circumstances. As of today, in April 2025, when we're recording this podcast, nothing else has happened. The house has been sold. Charlie moved out of the state. His whereabouts are currently unknown as he's not on social media. And no further information has been made public about the deaths of the girls. We don't have a single update. And that's the Anaqua Springs case.
My problem with the hitman theory, yeah, is killing the kids. Because like, yeah, if you want Nicole gone, whatever, you plan all this. It's not like the girls would be staying with Charlie.
They would go to their dads.
Yeah. So
like, why kill the kids?
Exactly. The only reason you would kill the kids is if they witness someone they know kill their mom, right?
Yeah, I agree.
But I guess the only reason I can think of why they don't have a conclusion yet is, say Charlie did it, he killed them and like immediately left the house for the night. Their time of death that we don't know, and when he left, we don't know. They're so close together that we can't say whether or not he was there or not.
This case isn't like twists and turns or gruesome and horrible. It's just kind of like, what the hell is happening? Why do we not have any answers for anything? You think it would be pretty blatant,
yeah,
on what happened. And then the whole 24-hour turnaround on the medical examiner's report for three bodies just is also odd to me.
When was the last update, did you say?
2020. And it's not a cold case. So
I mean, that still gives me hope. It's really frustrating, but I do think in the timeline of true crime, that's not that long. Unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it is way too long. Don't get me wrong, but it's not lose hope, you know?
Yeah. You guys want to jump into overtime?
Yes.
So I don't have anything crime wise to talk about. Oh, wait, I do kind of have, but I don't know shit about it. So I don't know if I wanted to talk about it yet, but have you guys seen, I sent it to you on Instagram, in New England, that there's totally a serial killer happening right now?
No. I looked into this to go over for overtime, and all the police and FBI are saying there's not.
What?
Tell me all the details.
We're at like 10 bodies or something crazy.
There's 7 bodies found within like a 2-month period up in New England. I think it's like 3 or 4 states. I think all female. And so there's this Facebook page dedicated to it, and they're like, there's a serial killer. And it has like 70,000 people added to the page, like follow the page, and everyone's like going crazy about it.
Yeah.
But then the police are like, no, they're not connected. I couldn't find anything about like cause of death. I don't know if they're just like,
I couldn't either. Yeah.
I don't know.
I did see that another body was just found either today or yesterday.
Crazy.
Totally a serial killer.
Were they all dead? Like the same cause of death? Like what, is there anything to link them?
No, they haven't like released anything. It's just that there's 7 or 8 bodies, I guess, now.
That have been found that are all female within 2 months in the same region.
Hmm. Yeah, but then I was like, I don't know if it's like, you know, like drug users who like overdosed in that alley. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, we don't know if it's like they all were shot in the head or something.
I guess we'll find out more as shit comes out. Because right now there's like no info. Like our case that we were talking about. Outside of the crime world, I am so excited to say that by the time you guys are all listening to this episode, I will have finally closed on my house because we close on Wednesday.
Yay!
Yay!
Finally.
I don't think we talked about it on the podcast, but this is Kate. Cameron and I bought a house. It is in the town. It's in the town very close to where I live right now. And we're very excited, but it's been a long process of actually closing on the house. So we're very excited. We close on Wednesday. We get that shit done. I'm going to take off some days from work and paint and do a bunch of fun activities in the house. And can't wait for you guys to visit sometime.
We're going to go knock down some walls.
Yeager.
Yay.
And Kylie's sister's having a baby soon.
I'm nervous.
I can't believe it.
That's this crazy.
Will be my first time attending a birth.
So you're going to be there in the room.
Yes.
I did not know that.
Oh.
I was surprised that I was asked to be one of the select few.
It's an experience. Regardless of what happens, do not tell her if she pooped or not.
I've already decided what my role is going to be, and that is comedic relief.
As expected, Kylie. That's probably the reason you are being invited.
I think that is. And also, like, I can go get snacks from the vending machine. You know what I mean? No. I can go get coffee. You know what
Kylie,
I mean?
I do think you could turn that into a side hustle. Everyone needs that there. At the hospital. I feel.
Don't get the good snacks, though, Kylie, because she can't eat the snacks. She can only have liquid.
I know. But then, like, as soon as the baby comes out, sushi, Jimmy John's, coffee, wine. I'm packing all of that in my bag. As soon as that baby pops out, we're having a mukbang.
Celebrate everything.
Mukbang.
Oh my God, I forgot about that. Yes. Did you know that if you have a C-section, so like I was pushing, right? And I pushed for a long time. And at some point they were like, all right, you have to have a C-section. She's not coming out. As soon as they decide you're having a C-section, you're also, not only have I not eaten the entire day because I went in at 6 a.m., didn't eat the entire day. I also can now not drink any liquids either for the C-section. Like you have to have no food, no liquids going on. All right. It's like 7 p.m. at this point. And because I had Millie at 7:07, I think. And after the C-section, you can only have water. You can't have food because you just had a C-section and trigger warning, all of your intestines are taken out and put back in. So you're not supposed to eat right away because it can really F you up.
They put it back in?
Well, they're like moving them around and they may have to like, they got to get the baby out. So they have to move. Like, have I told you this experience? Holly, if you have a C-section, you can't feel anything because obviously like you're hella high and drugged, but you feel the pressure of like, I could feel that there were hands inside of my stomach.
Ew.
It was really cool.
I think in my mind, I thought the baby's just like right there, you know, they just pull it out, you know?
No, because your baby's in the sack. I don't know. Do you want to have this conversation on
everything? I mean, I felt like there was a few layers, obviously.
Yeah.
But I didn't know about the moving. I guess I never have thought about moving around of like, I don't know.
They have to move stuff to be able to get the baby. And especially like if you've been pushing, the baby's head down in the birth canal usually. And so it's not just laying there in your stomach. It's kind of like shoved down.
So they got to pull it up and out.
Yeah. But the good thing is that because Millie was not
chill bumps right now,
because Millie didn't go through Mahuha, she didn't have a weird shaped head, because that's where you see babies that have odd shaped head, the cone heads. Is they're birthed naturally. They're being pushed out of a small hole in a C-section. They just come out like little baby Jesus. And so their head's totally fine.
Did I ever tell you about one of my sister's birth?
No, Holly's learning so much right now.
My little sister Bobo came out so fast.
Oh no.
That it was like a vacuum pressure and her whole body was bruised. So she came out
purple.
Black. High school graduation at the church, you know, they do like a little slideshow for all the high school graduates.
Oh no.
With like baby pictures and stuff. And we're all sitting there, you know, waiting for, you know, my sister's little slideshow. My mom put my other sister's baby pictures up.
That's hilarious. She's like, they'll never know.
Also, if you know Bobo, she is maybe the one of the, no offense, Bobo, one of the whitest people.
Mm-hmm. I'm sending you guys the photo.
Stop it, Kylie. Stop. Stop.
Don't, I wasn't lying.
Okay, you guys, obviously, like, you can't see. It is.
We'll post it on the website.
We are
don't
not
worry.
Racist here at Over My Dead Pod, okay? But that is a black baby.
No, but this is a white baby that's black. That's enough. Yes. That's crazy.
She's so bruised. She's a different color.
Yeah, so that's why my mom did not put her in the church.
Yeah, I would have been like, whose mixed child is this?
Yeah, like, this obviously not.
Or not even.
Vote.
Not even mixed. Wow.
Not even, because black babies are, like, pretty much born white.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Get up.
Wow.
That's nuts. I bet your stepdad was like, what? Your mom was probably also like, wait a minute, what?
The doctors are like, whoa, 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 listen, listen, listen.
Listen to us. That's crazy. That's a good story for her to tell. Yeah.
Little fun fact.
Yeah, really. So
I love when we start out on Over My Dead Pod with nothing for overtime, because it turns out being really hilarious.
Yes. You guys remember when we used to, like, actually do cases for overtime?
That was so funny of us.
The people like the conversations more. I was, like, scrambling to get information.
Yeah, me too. I was researching like I had a paper due or something.
So, oh, also, no, we already talked about it. Oh, well, okay. So the Pope died, obviously. We talked about that last podcast and what we were going to do for the, you know, to get a new Pope. Well, today on Instagram, I sent it to the girls, but I saw something on Instagram that was like, it was a joke, obviously, but that the new Pope was going to be decided from Ninja Warrior. And I was like, they heard us.
Yeah, if they copied us, obviously.
Yeah, we were first.
If they would have said wipe out, I would have sued.
Yeah, that would have been nuts. It would have been us. They would have heard it from us first, and we would have had time records, stamps, everything.
Maybe if this podcasting thing doesn't work out, we can be writers for, like, The Onion.
I could see that.
You for sure.
All right, ladies. Well, and everyone listening, thank you for tuning in to another episode of Over My Dead Pod. If you want even more information about this case, check us out at overmydeadpod.com. Not over my bed, but overmydeadpod.com. You can also check us out on social media at Over My Dead Pod. And make sure to tune in next week for another episode. Love you guys. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.